Locally produced, organic, and fair trade products at great prices. Sprouts will be open from 9:30 to 6 p.m., Monday through Friday. So you want to take a ride on the sustainable gravy train? Sprouts is now looking for volunteers to help out with tabling, outreach, and at the storefront. So just drop by and pick up your application. Juicebox is a sexuality education show geared to adult audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Dropped into Juicebox Radio, where sexuality educators quench your search for responsible, progressive sexuality over your lifespan. Yes, yes, you've landed in Juicebox Radio. Don't touch that dial. You're exactly where you want to be. It's CITR 101.9 FM with hosts, myself, Julia Saunders, and Caroline McGilvray. Or maybe you're just one of our online listeners tonight at CITR.ca. Could be anywhere in the world live right now. If you do ever miss a live show, you can download it at and get a podcast at juiceboxradio.com. I'm always bugging you for not being able to get this right, Caroline. But then I can't get it right at all. So.
It's all right. Our show should always be entertaining, always educational. Tonight's Juicebox show is all about pubic hair and you. And we're going to be taking calls, so feel free to call in and contribute to the conversation we're going to be having at 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR. Spring has begun.
Well, I think it begins in 45 minutes, I overheard Val say, and I think she's more accurate. I think it's 10:48.
Okay.
So at 10 to the end of our show, we'll have to do something about spring, because it is the sexiest time of the year when everything starts to bulge and engorge and grow and blossom and flower and burst.
And lots of pollination.
Yes, that's right. So it's a really, really sexy time of year. And actually, sex educators get the most bookings right now because the kids in the high schools are getting horny. Oh, your phone is going off.
Okay, I can't believe I actually
go
did
turn
that
it off,
in terms
lady.
Of that.
That's okay. But so I think it's really cute how you say Eve Ensler says, you can't love a vagina unless you love hair. Now, is this fact or fiction? I don't know. We do have some really cool guests on tonight on the show. We're talking about pubic hair and you. Now, the first guest is Hannah Varto. She is a clinical practice leader and a family practice nurse practitioner for child and youth programs at Vancouver Coastal Health. And Lenore Riddell is also a nurse practitioner at BC Women's Hospital. These two lovely women researchers are doing a study called Smooth Talking. And they're conducting research on the trends of pubic hair removal from women's perspectives. So they're surveying women ages 15 to 50 in Vancouver in the Lower Mainland. And I found this thing on the wall at the hospital where I was wandering the halls working. And I pulled a little tag off and did this study online. And it was very, very cute, very informative. And I thought, wow, this is really going to have some interesting results. So right away I emailed the researchers and I got Hannah Varto to be willing to come and talk to us tonight. So the way that they describe it on their website is they want to develop an understanding of why women remove their pubic hair. And at what age do they typically start doing that, describing the practices, and to outline the complications. So tonight we're going to be talking about all those elements and then sort of the benefits of pubic hair removal. And also I think these researchers want to gain a better understanding of the practice of pubic hair removal and to eventually develop clinical recommendations for appropriate methods that actually decrease the issues that come with pubic hair removal. There's potential spread of infections, development of dermatitis, etc. I'm sure Hannah Varto will talk more about that. So I'm going to put her on, if you don't mind pushing that phone button down. And we'll see. Welcome, Hannah Varto. Can you hear us?
Yes.
Great. Welcome to Juice Box. Thanks for calling in and being willing to talk about the Smooth Talking study. What's wrong? So hi. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Cool. So you didn't get to hear me, but I was sort of describing the study a little bit from based on what your website says. So tell us a little bit in your own words about this study.
The study that myself and my co-investigator, Lenore Riddell, are conducting right now is a study called Smooth Talking. It's about the phenomenon of voluntary pubic hair removal in women. We're specifically looking at women from ages 15 to 50, and we are wanting to find out both what women practice in terms of pubic hair removal and sort of why they do it, why they started it, and sort of some of their opinions about the reasons around pubic hair removal.
Cool.
That's the general gist of the study.
Mm-hmm.
It originally came out because Lenore and myself both work in women's health. We're both nurse practitioners. And we were noticing what we thought was a clinical phenomenon. We're seeing more and more women who are coming in for pelvic exams and pap tests who had removed some or all of their pubic hair. And we seemed to see more and more what we thought was an increase in pubic hair, pubic area rashes, ingrown hairs, or other skin infections.
Mm-hmm.
So we started to ask the question, you know, is this something new that we're starting to see? And we started to look to the literature, and we did a really extensive literature review, and there is almost nothing about this topic. There's a little bit about leg and underarm removal, but there's very little about pubic hair removal at all.
Interesting. Well, it certainly is an area, then I'm sure you got some funding right away, because there's like nothing. That's a perfect study to have, is where there's very little research. Is that not true?
Well, we are supported by the Women's Health Research Institute, and we're also supported by BC Women's Hospital.
Right.
And those two have come together to support our research. What we're doing right now is the survey of trying to see what it is women are in fact doing, with the hopes that we'll expand the research once we get the data into looking at clinical practice guidelines and being able to make recommendations about whether women, say, should or shouldn't remove pubic hair, or whether it's clean or not clean, and also if they choose to remove their pubic hair, what might be the best method in doing so, shaving, waxing, plucking, trimming, whatnot. Mm-hmm. And then there's also, we want to examine the qualitative analysis of the social phenomenon factor. If you look at, say, Playboy magazine from the 1980s, there's very little removal of pubic hair. You have what they would call full bush. And the 90s, you've got shapes going on in the pubic hair. And then after about year 2000, you start to see very little pubic hair maybe what they call a landing strip, but other than that, you're seeing very little.
Yeah, and or a full, you know, Brazilians and things like that. Interesting, we have, you know, speaking about what you mentioned in you seeing these trends as a nurse practitioner, the ingrown hairs and the different sort of polyps, and I'm sure there's all kinds of crazy sort of looking things where you'd be like, oh, what is that? And looking for STIs and that kind of thing, and realizing it's just an ingrown hair or whatever. But definitely as a nurse practitioner, as a doctor, I could see that you'd do a pelvic exam and you'd be like, oh, you're covered in these, you know, red bumps. Like, what is this? You know, what kind of dermatitis it might be or some kind of STI or whatever. So definitely I could see as a health practitioner, you'd be like really aware of the potential, unsightly or painful results of hair, of pubic hair removal. So
yes, we definitely do see an increase in the number of sort of skin rashes or infections or folliculitis. And that's what we're trying to see if, you know, obviously it's linked usually to the hair removal, but, you know, is it because they shave or they wax, and is it because the amount that they do? But then we're also really interested in why the social shift into the sphere of hair, specifically in the pubic region. And we're starting to ask some questions around, well, why do women do this in the first place?
So what is,
what do you think?
That is really interesting.
Sorry, what is your hypothesis then?
We have a number of hypotheses. They're going to be very difficult to test because social phenomenon is a difficult area to test true hypotheses.
Right.
Some of our hypotheses are around the advent and availability of internet pornography.
Mm-hmm.
In that, what I mean by that is, you know, when in 1970s and 80s, the pornography available was primarily magazines.
Mm-hmm.
As, you know, the 90s progressed, we got more and more into internet and much more availability of pornography. Mm-hmm. And so young people are starting to look to pornography to see what the genitalia are supposed to look like. So that begs the question, well, why did pornography go from having full pubic hair to having very little pubic hair between, say, the 70s up to year 2000?
Well,
and so some thoughts that we have had are around pornography being more and more explicit. As it becomes more and more explicit, there's the need to see what's going on. And if pubic hair is covering what the camera wants to see, then they need to remove the pubic hair so that there's more visualization. So there's a hypothesis that pornography has moved to removing the pubic hair to increase the visualization of what is actually going on and the explicitness of the pornography. And then we also have the advent of internet availability, and our young people are looking to the internet quite often, and that's where they're seeing what they would think that a woman or a man should look like. And we know that from other studies that have looked at what women or men, how they should be sexual, and the expectations of sexuality, often based on what young people have seen on internet or have seen role models. And so the hypothesis, I'm not sure, is a big stretch, but I'm not sure how we can test that, really.
Well, that's interesting. Caroline?
One of the other things I wanted to mention is just the whole schoolgirl fetish. I talked to a producer of porn this morning, who unfortunately wasn't able to call in, but one of the things she had recommended was that the teen and the schoolgirl fetish, girls gone wild, that sort of concept, they wanted the girls to look a little bit more younger.
I was just going to say.
And so the whole bald thing in terms of it makes them look more
prepubescent.
Thank you.
Wow, that's, yeah, a bit disturbing. But it's interesting, Hannah, that you're speaking about this because this is what Caroline was talking with me about, and she's saying, you know, this is also connected to porn, this, you know, the whole hair removal thing. And so I'm happy to see that you guys have connected that as well. I was having trouble actually putting it together in my mind before the show and going, well, yeah, but so this explicitity that you're talking about, I think, makes a lot of sense. Just for the camera angle. But then Caroline and I were sort of debating before the show tonight that whatever starts to happen in society, people just start to do more of and copy it and follow it. And so it becomes the norm. And then everybody's like, the landing strip is the norm. So, you know, the bushy vulva is just no longer acceptable. Or if you do it, then you're doing it because you, you know, are taking a feminist stance or something, and you decide to go against the norm and screw everybody that's doing shaving themselves bald. And I'm going to let it be au naturel and be kind of counterculture, right? So Anyway, that's or just kind of what we were talking about.
Yeah, or unless you're dating somebody who happened to grow up watching 70s porn and that's what gets them off.
Yeah, I've had certain people always, you know, saying, oh, I like lots of hair. The more hair, the better because of texture and whatever. But interesting. So, Hannah, may I call you that, by the way?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I was like, Ms. Bartow, doctor.
Hannah's fine.
Okay. So you have other hypotheses. This is really interesting. So do you have more?
Well, some of the hypotheses come around from the feminist angle as well, and mm-hmm. then also from the cleanliness angle. The feminist angle is more in support of women exercising their right to their, you know, feminist ability to change their bodies as they want to.
Right.
When you've got the counter hypothesis, which is that this is anti-feminist and that women are doing this because their male partners want them to or expect that's what women should look like and that their bodies aren't good enough the way they are.
Right.
Which is also an argument for leg and underarm hair removal, and that's documented quite well in the literature, actually, but a lot of feminist perspective literature, which is quite interesting because they've examined the social phenomenon of the leg and underarm removal, but it wasn't much concluded in terms of pubic hair.
Mm.
So then the other hypothesis that has come out is the concept of hair being dirty.
Right.
And that is actually being reflected quite a bit in our survey results, our preliminary results already. Many, many women have indicated that they feel that removing their pubic hair is actually cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we're not sure if that's true or not. And I can't say whether it is or not because we haven't got that far in our research. And mm-hmm. that's something I'd very much like to expand on in the future, is to actually examine is pubic hair actually protective and maybe protect some women against getting, say, genital warts or herpes
mm-hmm.
because of skin-to-skin diseases. But maybe it is, in fact, cleaner and that it doesn't hold bacteria against the skin better, and so it actually may protect them from getting some diseases.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know which way it is, and that's something I'm very interested in pursuing a little more. And I know Lenore's interested in that area as well.
Hmm. Very interesting. I mean, we'll talk a little bit more about your preliminary results, but I think just speaking from experience, if you think about what makes sense, if you grow your underarm hair and you don't wear deodorant, you do have a lot more odor because obviously the hair holds the bacteria and the bacteria starts to smell, right, as it breaks down or whatever, produces whatever it's producing. So,
it is, in fact, cleaner. The question still is it cleaner? Just because it smells, does it mean it's unclean?
Mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So the vagina has a natural odor. Mouths have natural odors.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that they're unclean.
Right.
Right.
Well, yeah. So I'm just speaking on the bacterial, you know, holding onto the hair thing with the underarms would be similar in the crotch area. I would think that hair would hold that bacteria that creates the smell, so it would also hold other bacteria. And I understand what you're saying about how that could be a plus or a minus as far as contracting or protecting against STI transmission.
Hair also locks in heat a lot of the times, I believe, in terms of that. So I can imagine it. I don't know if it would make the area sweat more. So.
And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's a bad thing. Who knows, right?
It depends on the pheromones.
It also may provide some protection as mm-hmm. well, just in terms mm-hmm. of heat protection and temperature, which, I mean, I guess the hypothesis is that's why we have it in the first place.
It can kill some certain things, especially viral things that are mm-hmm. that don't do well under hot conditions. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And it may provide a protective barrier between getting a skin-to-skin infection.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when you remove pubic hair, you may possibly be creating portals of entry into your body by creating open follicles.
Right.
Right? So it's really hard to say whether one way is or isn't at the moment, and mm-hmm. that's where we really like to go. And that's something that I found really interesting that's come out, is that many, many women have indicated they think that it's cleaner. And so I'm starting to ask the question, well, is it in fact cleaner? Does mm-hmm. Does it in fact protect against infection, or does it maybe promote infection?
Right. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Does it make them feel sexier, do you think?
There's definitely been a lot of women who've responded to our survey indicating that their partners, whether male or female, have said that that's what they prefer, and so that's why the woman does it. There's been a number of women who've replied saying that I don't really care one way or the other, but my partner prefers it, so that's why I do it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not so sure that they've replied so much that it makes them feel sexier, but possibly mm-hmm. by having their partner prefer it, therefore they feel sexier because their partner thinks they're sexier.
Because they're more desirable, or they feel that they're more mm-hmm. desirable.
Exactly.
So their partner desires them. Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, if you think that what you're wearing or how you look your partner likes, then you're going to obviously feel a little bit more confident about whatever it might be. So it makes sense. What other was...
Uh-huh. Interestingly, Interestingly enough, though, the majority of women who responded to our survey who actually do remove their pubic hair did say that it does make them feel more feminine. And that's really interesting when you think about the study from a feminist perspective, that changing their bodies from the way that they are actually, in fact, makes them feel more feminine. And you see that also in the literature about removing the leg and underarm hair.
Mm-hmm.
It makes women feel more feminine that way.
Hmm.
And that's quite interesting, I think, in that when you talk about some of the young schoolgirl look and whatnot, and it's interesting that women are saying that by sort of adopting that young schoolgirl look, it does in fact make them feel more feminine. And there's something interesting in there that I'm not sure what that social phenomenon or that thought process is exactly, and that, again, is another question that we need to explore further.
Julie and I were talking about this before the show, about the possibility of perhaps because we're having babies later, just in general as a society, that perhaps we're trying to look younger in so many ways, everything from Botox, where that's socially acceptable, it's mainstream in a lot of North America these days. Perhaps that might be one of the things, too. It makes everybody look younger.
Well, we're all trying so hard to look younger and younger for longer because we live so much longer.
Breast lifts.
And it's just like youth and beauty are so synonymous from, God, I don't know how long ago we made that decision, but I guess it's all procreative based. And, you know, so then it becomes societal norm and it becomes the push that happens.
People decide whether or not they like us within the first 10 seconds they take a look at us. So genetically we're engineered to react to what we see. And youth and beauty, as Julia, you're saying, it's been something forever.
So I think the schoolgirl thing. Sorry, go ahead, Hannah.
Enough on that point. In our survey, we have asked women to rate if it does, in fact, make them feel younger.
And
the majority of women have replied that no, they don't agree with that statement. The statement that they are agreeing with is that they think that it looks better in a bathing suit, it makes them feel more attractive, and that their partners prefer it, but that they don't agree with the statement that it actually makes them feel younger. Mm. But I question whether it makes me feel more attractive actually has to do with that youth is beauty norm that is perpetuated in our society quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, though, anecdotally, both Lenore and I have witnessed that young women will often state that removal of their pubic hair makes them feel older.
Interesting.
I wonder where the age line is there, but that, you know, some of our youth may actually be removing their pubic hair because they see it as a more mature thing to do.
That's interesting.
Well, it's, you know, I do sex education for a lot of young people, and, you know, I've got these 10-year-old girls with pubic hair growing, and they're absolutely horrified and want to remove it on every level because it makes them look older, you know.
Feel dirty.
And so it's interesting, but yeah, I would see a youth of 15 or 16, remembering even back to my youth and when I first started, you know, grooming, as I called it, was because I felt like it was like infringing on my youth almost. Yeah, it was aging me in a way. So is that kind of what you're talking about, or is it the opposite?
I think it's a little bit of both. Mm. In the fear of aging because of the youth beauty norm. But I think it's also that some of our youth see that women who are sexual, the mature women who have these fantastic lives and relationships as implied by not just pornography but also by media and the hairlessness that happens in our media and our advertising on television and movies, you know, the mature, experienced woman doesn't show a lot of hair.
Hmm. Find that with movies. And the reason why I ask that is the producer I spoke to this morning, who has produced some porn, said she found that really interesting that in a lot of movies, just mainstream movies, that women do tend to have hair. And she's wondering whether it was because the actors wanted to cover up their bits.
I imagine that's probably true.
We use the word bits on this show. That's our technical term.
I've heard the word Birkin before, so whether the actress actually has pubic hair or not is questionable because apparently there's a little wig that they can wear called a Merkin.
Merkin. Hey, I need to get one of those because I've had men in my past that don't like my landing strip, and so I kind of, you know, because I did electrolysis and I paid thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars and went through a lot of pain for a lot of years to have this landing strip, which I actually really regret now, and which is one of the reasons I grabbed to study paper and did it because I have a passion about, you know, warning women against doing anything too drastic and long-term forever because, you know, you grow and age over time and then you think, you know, I want my natural feminine bush back or something, and you don't have a choice anymore, you know, kind of thing. So.
And trends change. Even take eyebrows on the face. They're thicker now. They're back to the Brooke Shields bushiness of the 80s. It's slightly different compared to the ones where people were actually getting them shaved off and tattooed on about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's on the face. So
trends do change.
Trends do change.
And I think permanency in things like hair removal is just not a good idea. You know, you should warn the youth against it because I was just too... you know, immature to really understand that, you know, what I was doing at 25, I wasn't going to be happy with at close to 40, right? So, yeah, in your study, if you could write that in somewhere, Hannah, that'd be great, you know.
Is that anything that you're finding in terms of preliminary results, people regretting permanent hair removal?
I don't think we've gone that in-depth. We haven't asked the question specifically, do you regret doing it? And some of our qualitative answers haven't necessarily pointed to that, but honestly, I haven't come across too many who've also said they've had permanent hair removal. That's not the majority of the women in the survey. The majority of them are continuing to shave and use salon waxing as well as trimming. So the majority of the women, just to sort of give a number also of how many women we're talking about here, our statistics are showing it's about 96% of women who've responded to our survey do in fact remove some or all of their pubic hair at some point in their life, which means there's only about 3 or 4% who have never removed any of their pubic hair. So that's sort of the numbers we're talking about. We're talking that this does seem to be a normal practice among women. And the methods that they're using, the top three that they have ever used but also continue to use are shaving and salon waxing and trimming with scissors.
Right on. So how many women have actually responded? Do you have a number on that at all? Oh, did you just drop your cell phone?
I just dropped my phone.
Okay. I was just asking if you, what the actual number on, do you have, like, has there been 100 people responding or how many?
Close to 600.
600 women. Wow, that's significant.
Yes.
That's a great study. Good for you. You know, thank goodness for the internet and these surveys online. Aren't they just fabulous? I mean, I think data collection is so much better and easier than it used to be ever. So that's a positive for the research of the world. That's quite a number. That's like almost 100%.
That's wild. Are you finding shaving? Is there any questions in there in regards to about shaving? About it being a sexual act?
Yes. There is a question in our survey that asks women if they agree or disagree with the statement as it relates to them. And one of the questions in there is that it is part of their sex play. And the majority of women have disagreed with that statement, although there is still a large number of women who strongly agreed with that statement as well. So I'm not sure we'll find statistical significance on that, but we haven't done the statistics on our survey yet.
Right.
The survey study actually ends at the end of April.
Okay.
And so at that time, we can actually release some more data that's actually been calculated statistically.
Great.
And where can people find out more about this study?
If people want to find out more about the study, they can go to our website. And our website is, I have to find it again. Our website is www.whri.org/smoothtalking, and that's all one word, .htm. And you have to type the HTM at the end or it doesn't show up. So if people are having trouble finding our website, they can go to the Women's Health Research Institute webpage, which is www.whri.org, and it's under the current research section that's ongoing, and there's a link there to our website. People can find out more about it, and there's a link to the survey there, too, if they're interested in looking at it.
That's fabulous. Hannah, I really appreciate you calling in. It sounds like a really interesting work you're doing, and I actually personally thought the study was really well written, and the questions were quite diverse, and the results seem really, really interesting. And I think that it's going to keep going. I can just tell it's going to carry on in the areas that you're interested in finding out about the cleanliness and the connection with the STI protection or what have you. So I really appreciate you calling in. It's fabulous, and maybe you'll call back and we'll do another interview when we have some more results.
That would be great, and when we can expand on our research a little more to look at examining some of these results. I just wanted to note quickly just that this study wouldn't be possible without my co-investigator, Lenore Riddell. Mm-hmm. It's definitely been very encouraging, and we've gone through a lot of the hoops together, and it's been lots of fun and a learning experience, but also with the Women's Health Research Institute and the Children and Women's Health Center of British Columbia have been very supportive. And then their head, one of their research advisors, Ginny Hayes, has been just
absolutely
a huge, huge part of this and advising us on this. So
without
those people, this wouldn't be taking place.
Right on. Well, thank you.
Keep up the good work.
And do keep in touch with us. Thanks, Hannah.
Thank you so much. We're going to take a short break at this time. You are listening to Juicebox Radio on CITR 101.9 in Vancouver. Keep that dial locked. We welcome your calls at this time, so give us a call at 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR. We'll be right back.
She asked me why I'm just a hairy guy. I'm hairy noon and night, hair that's a fright. I'm hairy high and low, don't ask me why, don't know. It's not for lack of bread, like the grateful dead, darling.
Give me a head with hair, long, beautiful hair, shining, gleaming, steaming, flashing, waxing. Give me down to there, hair, shoulder length, longer. Here, baby, there, mama, everywhere, daddy, daddy, hair. Slow it, show it, long as God can find my hair. Let it fly in the breeze and get caught in the trees. Give a home to the fleas in my hair. A home for fleas, a hive for the buzzing bees, a nest for birds, there ain't no words for the beauty, the splendor, the wonder of my hair. Blow it, show it, long as God can grow in my hair. I want it long, straight, curly, fuzzy, snaggy, shaggy, ratty, matty, oily, greasy, fleecy, shiny, gleaming, steaming, waxing, waxing.
Juicebox is a sexuality education show geared to adult audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
And we are back. So first of all, we're going to be back with our juice berries.
Pubic hair and you we're talking about tonight, right?
Yes.
Here on Juicebox Radio. And we have our second guest interview coming up. Melanie is going to be talking to us. We're going to introduce her in a minute. But first, we have our juice berries, yeah?
We do.
Okay, so the two juice berries we have tonight are not sexual related.
Well, I don't
know. But they're
the
people
David
that
Bowie
we know
thing?
And care about. I know you and the David Bowie. Yes, we talked about this last week. But, okay, so East Van All-Stars, I have to announce, because Watermelon sent me the thing today. And I'm always telling her, send me your stuff about your shows, and I'll plug it on Juicebox. And this is the first time she actually did it. So you can buy tickets at the door. It sold out last time. They filled the Grandview Legion on Commercial Drive. Filled full. I think there was like 400 people or 500 people. It was insane. This year, again, fabulous lineup. Watermelon is emceeing it along with some others, and I highly recommend you check it out. It was a really good show last year. Doors are at 8, tickets only at the door, and the show starts at 9. So, and that's it. So East Van All-Stars, I don't know, just Google it, find it, I'm sure. I tried to find where you can get more information, but there isn't. It just says tickets at the door, 8 o'clock doors, you know, Commercial Drive, Grandview Legion.
It could be kind of a sexual thing, because if you've seen Watermelon on Rec Beach at
yes.
all, you've seen her naked. If you've seen her on, what was that magazine called?
She's all over the pot, the marijuana.
Where she was posing
magazines.
Naked on the front of the magazine. So
she's a hot vixen, that
she's
one.
She's a very hot vixen, so she's standing in front of you. You can imagine what she looks like naked. Other one, which does have to do with sex yes. as well, because there's burlesque there. Be There or Be Square for the Bowie Glam Ball. And it's a spinoff of the Love Grace Affair. And DJ Darren and Chris Strebley are spinning the fashion show by Nancy Black, complete with burlesque from Audra Diamond Minx, Luscious Dance, Brunette Blonde, and
Is this
Partial
Brunette
Proof.
Blonde? What is this? Is this a pole dancing troupe?
It is a true pole dancing troupe.
Sounds like they're new and exciting. I've never heard of them, so I'm quite excited to see that.
I think
that.
They're going to be very cool. And also partial proceeds to Beauty Night, which we do help survival sex workers. So
okay,
again,
you're
it ties
right. There
in.
Are sex things
There
in
is
here.
Sexy things
good,
there.
Good,
it's
good.
Next Thursday, and that's March the 27th. And it's at Celebrities, which
of course,
really celebrates sexuality
sex.
In so many different ways. So if you want to find out about that, you can go to lovegraceaffair.com for more
right
information.
Okay, so let's welcome Melanie from Bent Salons, right?
Melanie yes. Salvador.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, Melanie Salvador, and you are a medical esthetician student?
Correct, correct.
Wow,
correct.
Okay, so you're already an esthetician?
Yeah, we graduated in December, so.
And you're doing that, but now you're doing the medical side.
Yeah, so we're pretty much almost done, a couple more weeks.
This is really cool. Okay, so we have this fabulous interview. Now, I see you've prepared an incredible interview here, so we're going to try to get through everything, because it all looks very interesting. First question, why do you think lack of pubic hair has become so popular?
Well, I think it actually, I was talking to a few girls.
Oh, I like the way you said it,
today.
Caroline. Oh, I screwed
up.
Sorry, it was just so cute.
Did we want to rephrase that?
Caroline, I want you to rephrase it.
All right, I'll rephrase it, but I just want to point out one thing, Julia. Our listeners cannot see our script. They cannot sit here, and they're not looking at the script going, Julia, you read the wrong copy. Julia,
I know, but I love
wrong.
The way you wrote
Julia.
This, and I totally skipped over it, so I want to say it.
I appreciate that.
So let's just start this interview
let's
all
Let's just start
over
all again. Welcome, Melanie from Bent Salons.
Hi.
So I want to ask you, why did pubic hair maintenance change so much in the last 30 years, from 70s bush to baby smooth and several variations in between?
You know, I actually asked a few people about this today, and interestingly enough, I had quite a few different responses, but the main thing I wanted to mention was the fact that it seemed to be almost a religious thing that they were doing in the Middle East, and how it kind of relates to Islam, and there is some sort of, I can't remember exactly what it's called, but there is some sort of a law with Islam that they're not supposed to have some sort of pubic hair or hair in certain areas, that kind of thing.
Interesting.
I don't really want to get into the technicalities of everything. It's going to take forever. But yeah, so it's basically religious and hygienic reasons in the Middle East. And I think with all the integration of people moving around and us seeing more and more immigrants in North America, it has become more and more popular for sure.
I think the bikini styles are shrinking, and so, you know, you have hair kind of bushing out the sides, like the little hairy spiders hanging out.
Oh,
the side.
Julia.
You know,
well, we try not to see that, but yeah.
So I think women are trying to kind of pull that in a bit, because honestly, that just doesn't look very good. I don't know.
I remember one woman with those thong. Do you remember those thong workout wear that we used to wear at the gym?
Yeah, in the 80s.
Back in the 80s.
Full on.
I remember a woman with tufts of hair sticking out
sides.
Yeah,
it's like,
from
what are you
there.
Doing, ladies?
Yeah,
what are you doing there?
Yeah, that was definitely the Debbie Dell. Does Dallas days back in the first ones were definitely not.
I think some of that. We were talking with Hannah Varto as well from doing the study on what's it called? It's such a cute name, Smooth Talking Study on removing pubic hair. And she was talking about the cleanliness thing and and then some of the results from the study are sexual reasons. And I would think maybe you can speak to those sexual reasons a little bit.
Well, for me personally, I mean, if you were on a sexual note, it seems a lot more hygienic. I mean, everybody does their own thing and has their own, sexual style, I suppose, and activity and needs
preferences
and blah, blah, blah. And I'm sure that most men's preference would obviously be to be without hair.
Mm.
So
I think there's a sensitivity thing, too, I actually think. Because if you think about a hairy arm and you rub your finger on it, and then you shave that arm and you rub your finger on it again kind of thing, there's so much more sensitivity without the hair kind of buffering the touch. So I would imagine on your genitals, you're going to have a lot more sensitivity if you have no hair there.
I wonder if Hannah's include the orgasm factor in there, how many more women are able to achieve orgasm beforehand.
But I mean, I think the hair would actually increase the sensitivity.
Yeah, so then, the hair would increase it. Oh,
yeah, because then you're kind of tugging at it, right? Kind of. So when you you go down there, it's like you're kind of tugging at it. It's like having a piercing on top of your hood, So it touches your clitoris, and you know, it makes it more sensitive because there's actually something being pulled and moved around.
And tickling, I could see the hair tickling, the skin and your maybe the inner part of your folds and your clitoris and that kind of thing. But I was it's interesting actually.
I'm sure it's just personal preference. Sure.
Well, there's got to be some benefits and pluses there somewhere. I'm sure we could break it all apart, but let's talk about the next question.
I'm sure we could talk about it for hours, actually.
Yeah.
Because I could just see with that, if it's why deny ourselves pleasure, if with having full bush, if that makes us hotter, or is it because guys will go down on us more if we are shaved because there's no chance of getting a hair caught in between their teeth?
That's right.
there's always that possibility. What are type of styles are you seeing?
We normally see the typical, the triangle, also the landing strip or the full Brazilian, or for men it's the full Monty.
The full Monty.
Yeah. Apparently this is what it's called, but
full balls and all, or
yeah,
like
full balls and all. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And it's pretty popular, and a lot of heterosexual men are getting it as well. So,
what's this Chaplin's mustache here?
I just actually found that today. I've never actually seen that one, but apparently it's quite popular in the States, where it's a shorter, square version of the landing strip.
So maybe it comes up off the where the clitoris sort of top the clitoris, and it kind of comes up a bit, so you see the little line of the. Of where the skin comes together and the clitoris sort of starts on the outside there.
But it's for men
see that.
As well.
Yes. Maybe not to tickle their nose so much if they get that little bit of the hair off the pad. That's where the densest amount of hair is, isn't it?
It's right on the top, yeah.
Yeah. Well, why is that? Let's talk about that for a minute. Why do you think that there's that big, huge patch right there? Because that's obviously where the protection of the...
Are you talking about the patch, like the big mound in the top?
I'm talking about right above the clit where the hair, like if you spread your lips apart... That patch of hair that's right above the clit, like where the hair starts above the clit, that's where the densest amount of hair is, I would imagine. That's what I think from my experience.
That's the densest part as well.
So it's obviously there for protection because that's where maybe things would be dropping down into the area.
But then when you think about the clit, it sticks out. So how can anything really drop down in that area?
Well, not everyone's clit sticks out. You should have seen enough of these vulvas by now, Melanie. You must know that there's lots of innies out there.
Interesting.
There's the innies and the outies. But anyway, I don't know. I mean that, but
I need to go out there and explore a little more.
I don't know. You must have seen at least 100 women by now. You could probably do your own study.
What are some of the unusual
ones? I'll bring that up with Rich at Ben's, and I'm sure he'll just love that one.
Is he listening tonight?
Oh, I'm sure he is.
Hi, Rich.
All right, so
what are some of the unusual ones that you've seen in terms of hairstyles, so to speak?
Hairstyles, yeah, absolutely. I think the strangest would probably be the dyeing. Some people would like them dyed, like to match, like the
carpet and the curtains matching.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. Or their pet poodle.
Yeah. Kind of scary, but yeah.
Well, I can kind of understand that. Like, I know some fake blondes that just shave their pubic hair because they don't want people to know that they're fake blondes. So they don't try to do the dyeing. They just shave completely and don't let anyone see their hair.
Yeah, but then the poor guy that goes down on the person that shaved, I mean, like, it can get stubbly.
Yeah,
oh, poor tongue.
It can get stubbly. Well, if you're licking so much of that area that you're getting a poor tongue, I would think you're missing the clitoris, which has got no hair on it.
But anyway. We are talking about men, right?
Yeah. Uh-oh, girl. I'm sounding a bit too cackly there.
Meow.
Okay, meow. I'm getting all hot. I'm going to take my sweater off here now. Okay. This is great.
So there's a mohawk?
Yeah, apparently my girlfriends were talking about how they've done quite a few of the mohawks where, you know, the middle is spiked. So I imagine they'd have to spike it before intercourse or, like, to make it look appealing.
Like, excuse me.
Get the little Billy Idol look going. I don't know, you know, like.
Some product in there.
Yep, get a little bit of product.
I'm just trying to imagine how that would work under jeans.
Yeah, it wouldn't work. It's kind of like a, you know, like a, you know, like a preoperative thing that you would do.
Preoperative. I love that word. Okay. It's called sex, ladies. Okay, so before the operation of the penetration. Okay, so, and the dyed, I think that's very interesting. The red, I like the idea. Maybe I'll dye my pubic hair red. I like that idea. Okay.
You can always shave it off if you change your mind.
Yeah. So,
or laser it off, actually.
Laser's pretty popular these days.
Yeah, yeah.
I've heard some scary myths about laser. Is it true that it can harm in terms of make you more at risk of cervical cancer or ovarian?
That's something that I'm not so sure I can answer on. I've never really seen any research that stipulates that it causes cancer. You know, I can say that it was pioneered after more than 30 years of laser research by many physicians to provide safe and effective hair removal. So, I mean, aside from that, it's very difficult to say without proper... I haven't delved deep enough in the research to even answer that kind of a question.
What I find neat about going to the spa, I think whenever you go to the hairdresser or you go to the spa, you talk about your life. I tell my hairdresser things that I wouldn't tell a lot of people, except maybe Julia.
Right.
But with that, it's interesting. Even right when you go to a spa for the first time these days, when you're filling in the questionnaire with your name, your address, they ask you if you're on the birth control pill. Is there a reason for that, why they're asking about our sex lives?
It's not necessarily about your sex life. The birth control pills, there is a reason. It can cause some sort of, you know, photosensitivity, possibly like hyperpigmentation, dermatitis, and just can make the whole laser experience a little bit more uncomfortable.
And also, undesirable, by the sounds of it. The hyperpigmentation would not be a positive at all.
I mean, and these are possibilities. Right. It's not necessarily going to happen. Mm-hmm. But obviously, you have to inform your patient that there is a possibility that this might happen, for sure. For sure. And as far as all kinds of medications, sure, there's a lot of medications that would be, you know,
contraindication,
like,
with lasering.
Yeah, if you're using like acne medication, like Accutane, something like that, we'd actually have to wait for you to be completely off the pills for at least a year before we can even contemplate doing. Yeah,
that's interesting. Yeah. That says a lot about lasering and a lot about Accutane. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so let's talk a little. So since we're on the laser topic, let's get into that one a little bit, a little bit more. And so I've heard that the laser like really hurts. I know someone who is getting their pubic hair lasered years ago, and it was just like intensely painful. So maybe it's changed. What this is like, I don't know, number of years, 5 years or so?
With any machinery in regards to aesthetic medicine, it's constantly changing. Tomorrow will be something different, and the day after will be, again, something different. As far as lasers, it's even more than any other type of aesthetic machine, such as like microdermabrasion or something like that. But definitely, there is going to be a little bit of discomfort, but the way the systems work now is the cooling systems are becoming more and more advanced. So it's becoming less and less painful. The chill tip basically numbs the skin and protects it from any thermal damage. For sensitive facial and body areas, a topical anesthetic can be prescribed.
And applied before the treatment or
Absolutely.
Whatever, yeah. When I was getting my electrolysis, I always had EMLA. I would put EMLA on for like 45 minutes before I would
go in for my treatment. But electrolysis is a lot more painful than laser hair removal. I mean... from what I know...
one by one.
Yeah, from what I know, actually, electrolysis can kill the nerve, not just the hair follicle, but the nerves around it as well.
I could imagine. So,
whereas laser hair removal actually targets just the hair follicle.
So are you saying that with electrolysis there could be potential loss of sensitivity to the genital area?
I actually can't say that. I'm not in a position to say that. I haven't studied electrolysis, but from what I know, it's not.
That's sad. Yeah, My poor little vulva. It's all reduced in its sensitivity. Oh, well. Again, another reason why I shouldn't have done it. Okay, so with the laser... again, I just want to know, like, how does it work? Mm-hmm. Look, I don't know much about it, so since we have you.
Yeah, well, usually the patient will come in and we'll talk about, you know, if there's any, you know, if the client is pregnant, then that's not going to be a possibility. There's certain contraindications that we can't treat for skin. Mm-hmm. We'll do the consultation, and then we'll do the first treatment. Usually it takes about, depending on the area that we are doing, it could take up to 3 or 4 treatments.
And this can be on men's backs, and it's like, you know, any kind of hair that you don't want, unwanted hair. So
any unwanted hair, for sure.
Yeah, which is, I mean, for some men, they have so much embarrassment about their back hair and stuff, so shoulders or whatever.
Right.
So I'm just talking to the men out there, too, and we'll get to them a bit more as well in a minute. But, yeah, so vulva, underarms, arms, wherever it is that you have hair you don't want.
Yeah.
But it does take more than one treatment, yeah.
Absolutely, because, you know, the laser only targets active hair. Right. Mm. So, and hair has several different stages. So, you know, you can only target
what's growing.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So it's like with waxing as well, where it's the various stages.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
Cool.
Exactly.
All right.
On that note, I did want to touch base in terms of the menstrual cycle. I know with waxing that you've got to be really careful in terms of when you're ovulating and when you choose to get waxed. Is it the same with laser?
Same with laser. It's you don't treat during the ovulation era. Which is in a 28-day cycle, it's the 13th, 14th, and 15th day. Obviously, you don't treat 1 to 3 days before your menses. So,
just because of sensitivity?
Yeah, sensitivity,
or is there anything else hormonally?
I actually made the mistake of doing a Brazilian once, 1 day before. I have a high pain threshold, and even I was in tears. So,
I've got a low pain tolerance, so I can't imagine that.
Yeah, I've
had waxing and electrolysis done at all stages of ovulation and menstruation, and definitely there's a big difference.
Yeah.
I don't mind the pain for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah, there's something to be said about that, too.
It's strange. I'm a bit of a masochist, you know. I also go to the gym a lot, so I'm a bit of a masochist, and I'm a very, you know, I'm a yogini, so although they say in yoga it shouldn't hurt, but I do tend to stretch myself till it hurts. But anyway... It's all about masochism. That's how you stay in shape these days. Anyway.
I know all about that. I go to the gym probably about as much as you do. Yeah, for sure.
You have to be a bit of a masochist. Okay, so, what else? What else can we ask our lovely guest, Melanie?
What type of trends are you seeing with guys? Because I know laser back hair removal. That'd be really traumatizing if they did remove the back and if laser could do that. But is there, in terms of the pubic region, are you seeing any guys who are getting balls and all and that?
Well, it's been happening for quite some years where they've been removing their hairs, whether they're homosexual or heterosexual. But certainly...
From laser or just waxing?
Both.
I'm thinking these men with the laser on their balls, how can they do it? Oh, my God.
It's the same way we can do it.
I know, but I think the balls are just a little different.
But we have the clitoris. It's the same thing. We've got all that.
But you
that
don't
hair.
Laser the clitoris. You don't laser it.
Yeah, but that area just above the clit is pretty sensitive too, right?
And the densest hair.
If I was a man and I had balls, I wouldn't let a laser anywhere near my family jewels.
I just want the balls. Forget about it, you know?
But yet we let them go near our clits.
Well, I think you can protect your clit, can't you? While they do the lasering above the clit. Can't you protect your little button? I don't know.
Yeah. What do you have to say about that?
Well, of course, we protect all the areas that we don't want to laser, for sure.
Sure, but the balls, it goes right into those little... What does it do to the sperm in there? I don't know.
But it's the same. What does that do with their eggs?
Our eggs are protected quite far into the body.
That's right.
It's true,
that's right,
too.
That's right.
I just think that little thin skin.
But they have way more sperm than we have eggs, so
yes,
I'm
that's
sure
right.
they
kill
they
them away.
Afford to lose a few.
Okay.
They swim.
That's right, and they do. Yes, they can. They can come every day for 100 years.
What do you see as trends coming up?
I think the more women I talk to, I think as far as the Brazilian is becoming less and less popular. Women nowadays are starting to leave it alone or just give it a little trim.
That's what the researcher said. She said that it's just shaving, trimming, like, and just sort of doing bikini line and just trimming a bit, keep the bush down a bit, but basically leaving au naturel and just, you know, keeping her a bit shorter. Keeping the spiders from the sides of the underwear and the bikinis.
What's happening now is people are beginning to think about cancer and protection, and they're starting to worry more and more about why we're getting sicker and sicker, and they're starting to think it's something that we're doing. It's you know, it's not just the food that we're ingesting, it's more, you know, what we're doing on the outside of our bodies as well. So they're wearing less makeup, or they're starting to wear mineral makeup, healthy, and they're starting to use organic products and just change everything.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Mother Nature made us a certain way, and I think that people are starting to understand that the closer we are to, like, what's natural, the better off we kind of are, although there's those Barbies out there that just keep putting Botox
in them. So that's great. So all you bus riders, beware of all those, like, you know, women who don't shave their armpits. I'm sure it's going to be fun.
Hey, if we all started doing it and we all started smelling like that, nobody would notice, because we'd all be like, that's just normal.
Cavemen. Right.
One of the things that Hannah Vardo mentioned in the first half of the show was the development of dermatitis. And are you seeing a lot of rashes and things from people coming in from shaving or waxing, and perhaps any scars or anything like that?
No, I haven't really seen any real marked areas where people are getting more dermatitis or... usually, you know, I mean, I know with myself as well and my clients... if they had a rash in that area, I seriously doubt they'd want to come see me. So even if they did, I wouldn't know, because they'd probably, like, you know, reschedule their appointment until it cleared up or something.
Or do they ever call afterwards where they say that they reacted badly to the wax or to a laser
I've
or anything like
that? I've never heard of that, yeah.
And not necessarily from you, but from another, maybe somebody else? Or...
I've never heard any of that from any of my clients or from any of, like, you know, friends, clients, or anything like that. So, no. I know that that could be a possibility, but I've never actually heard of it actually happening.
Well, I know I had a lot of problems when I was going through all the massive amounts of treatments and waxing and electrolysis, and it was intense, like crazy ingrown hairs. And I'm surprised I'm not covered in scars, actually.
But when were you, when did you do the electrolysis?
Electrolysis, it was about 10 years ago.
Yeah, so things have changed.
I was like 26 to 28 or so.
Yeah.
And back then they didn't have laser for blondes, so, you know, I didn't have a choice. Cool. So the balls and all, I'm still kind of reeling from that. Yep.
Yeah. We did touch on as well in terms of Quest for Youth, like the Botox being so popular these days in terms of the faces, just making sure everything's trimmed. Do you think part of it is because of the fact we're getting married later sometimes, having kids, extending the period of time that we're able to do that, that perhaps that might be one of the reasons why we're trying to maintain our looks?
Yeah, and I think people are becoming more and more concerned, like, just in general, whether they're, you know, not getting married later or earlier or whatever, it doesn't really matter. They're just more concerned. I mean, I'm starting to see my friends that are even married, and they're concerned about the way they look, even though they are married. So, you know,
I think it's a general trend of just everybody is looking better and better, and we're just all looking at each other looking great, and then we're like, oh God, I need to look better too. And so it's just this competition, and it's not necessarily... And science is making advances, and, like, we just, you know, people are getting better looking.
Eventually we're going to be able to basically freeze our brains and build a whole brand new body.
Wow. Okay, so.
It's a concept with that. Thank you so much for being on
our
show.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
That was great. Thanks for being such a great guest.
And if they want to come and visit you,
absolutely.
What's your website?
www.bentbeauty.com.
Bent Beauty. I love it. Such a great name. Such a great brand. It's kind of like Bent.
I know.
It's great. No, I think it'll really work well for getting attention. So thank you so much, Melanie.
Thank you again.
We hope you enjoyed tonight's show. We'll be back next week. And in the meantime, if you have any recommendations for a show topic you'd like to hear or questions about anything to do with sexuality relationships, please feel free to email myself, julia@juiceboxradio.com. And I can always send things to Caroline, of course. So Hans Claus's Misery Hour is coming up next. Tune into Juice Box Radio every Wednesday night at 10 o'clock. Do you have anything you want to add to that, Caroline? Sorry.
I did. That's okay.
Oh. You just experienced Juicebox Radio, a show dedicated to developing your relational and individual sexual health, expressing diversity, celebrating queerness, and encouraging pleasure at all stages. Be sure to tune into Juicebox every Wednesday night at 10. In the meantime, you can check out juiceboxradio.com. Thanks for listening.
Right, then. Here we go.